Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western and Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and today, this evening, our guest is going to be William Kennedy. We're going to be talking about his new book called Satanic Crimes. Now, we've interviewed William in the past on another book called Lucifer's Lodge. Of course, William's coming from a Catholic perspective, but he's talking about homosexuality in Catholic seminaries across America and how these truly demonic forces were introduced into the Catholic seminaries so that tragically, many times people began to become priests and they weren't allowed to become priests because they weren't homosexual. How could this possibly have happened? How could it be that Ted Haggard, the leader of the 30-million-member National Association of Evangelicals, the leader of this organization could be a homosexual who was using his position to undermine Christianity? Ladies and gentlemen, how do we understand what's going on in the world today? How do we understand that the Supreme Court has held that it's unconstitutional to have prayer in schools, even to mention the name of God? To have the Ten Commandments in our schools. How could this have come about when the Supreme Court opens its sessions every day, when the crier comes in and says, God save the United States and this honorable court? If they can open their sessions with prayer and mention of God, why can't we mention God in our schoolrooms? And it's very, very simple. There's a satanic conspiracy against God. It permeates every aspect of our society. They have their people planted in key positions at every level of government, within the media, within our universities, doing everything they can to undermine and destroy the moral fabric of our society, within the great tax-exempt foundations, within Hollywood. Now, certainly many of the people there are not in any way directly Satanists. They're just simply influenced by this anti-God, anti-Christian influence is there, but the influence is there, and there really are literally dozens of different satanic organizations all across America, and the reason you haven't heard about them is because of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think, and that's why I think that William Kennedy's new book, Satanic Crimes, is so very important, because he'll help you to begin to put together some of the dots out there. William, thank you so very much for being with us, and thank you for writing your new book.
Oh, thank you for having me back, Dr. Stan. And Satanic Crime, I'm very proud of this book. And you can get it now at RadioLiberty.com. You have some copies for sale on your site, and people can order it through you. Now, what Satanic Crime will give you, it is an overview of Satanism from Victorian times to the present day. And you'll get a few. The first chapter is a history of modern Satanism, and that will run you through like Aleister Crowley and Anton LaVey and Michael Aquino and Boyd Rice and all the major Satanists that are around. Now, the next chapters are actually case studies of serial killers who are also Satanists, like Charles Manson, Varge Vikernes, Joe Fiorella, a lot of these serial killer Satanists you haven't heard a lot about. And then in the final part of the book, I tie in satanic pedophilia with elite satanic secret societies, specifically the Bilderbergers, the Skull and Bones, and the Bohemian Grove. And I show that there are intimate connections between these elite Luciferian secret societies and serial killers, particularly the Bilderbergers.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, William, go ahead and pick up the story. And certainly you've done a great job of really beginning to tie together a lot of things that most people have never even really thought of. Of course, you didn't mention the name of one of the most famous of our serial killers, the man who was involved in the Son of Sam's murders, David Berkowitz, who's actually become a Christian and has come forward and told about this satanic cult. So
I really want to start. Sure. Well, I have a whole chapter on David Berkowitz. He was one of the Son of Sam serial killers who terrorized New York City in the late 70s. And as you say, when he was originally arrested, he said that his neighbor's dog, Sam, told him to kill these people. But that turned out to be a cover story. He was actually part of a satanic group called the Children, which was a spinoff of the Process Church of the Final Judgment, which was a major Satanist group in the 1960s. And the thing is, the mainstream media, as you mentioned earlier, Dr. Stan, it will always downplay or put cases of Satanism on the back burner of reporting. They will report on it, but it will never get on the like front page or given much emphasis. For example, in the case of Varg Vikernes, who I mentioned earlier, the government of Norway has banned the Satanic Bible by Anton LaVey. Now, you would think the banning of any book by a foreign government would make the cover of Time magazine or the cover of the New York Times and the Washington Post, but it did not. It was completely ignored. And this is, as you said earlier as well, the people at the top of this power structure who are involved in these satanic secret societies also control the means of production and paper advertising. For example, Fred Smith, the founder of Federal Express, is a member of the Skull and Bone Society at Yale, which is a satanic organization featured in Robert De Niro's current film, The Good Shepherd. And just imagine all of the money he pays in advertising for Federal Express, and he himself is in a satanic organization. The networks and the mainstream media, they're not going to press it too much about Satanism as to detract attention off of people like Fred Smith, who, they pay for vast segments of advertising. Federal Express has 200 cities now in China for the new Chinese Industrial Revolution. So they're well embedded in the New World Order and the new economy. And that's pretty much what these organizations do. They operate for the benefit of fellow members, and I'm talking about people like John Kerry and George W. Bush, who are members of the Skull and Bones.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with William Kennedy. Well, William Kennedy was just saying that really you're not going to expect the media to tell you what's going on, because some of the most wealthy people in our nation belong, for instance, to Skull and Bones. They're not going to come out and tell you what Skull and Bones is really about.
Well, now just consider two of the names that are members, the Heinz Ketchup Fortune family and the Pillsbury Baked Goods Fortune are two Skull and Bones names. So imagine if they were to cut back or even threaten to cut back on advertising dollars, as well as Federal Express and other companies these major Satanists controlled, it would just be foolhardy for the networks to do anything against them. So it's just an implied threat. They don't even have to make an overt threat. It's just quite obvious that they're not going to emphasize anything about satanic secret societies or Satanism in general. They'll always downplay it and put it on the back burner.
Well, I think it was so interesting when, of course, Tim Russert asked George Bush in on a television program.
Eat the press, yeah.
What about, Skull and Bones? And of course, George Bush says, well, it's just too secret to talk about. Then he asked later, Russert asked John Kerry about it. Oh, he says it's too secret to talk about. Now, these are men who are running for the presidency of the United States. Where is their loyalty? Is it to the Constitution? Or is their loyalty to this secret society that they pledged their life to? And of course, that nobody has ever come forward and lived to tell the story of what this is really all about. We only catch little glimpses of what Skull and Bones is about And actually, there's a fascinating part here, you know, in William Kennedy's book about what we do know about people who've actually snuck in and taken video pictures of these ceremonies. And would you like to tell us just a little bit about the skull and bones ceremony and the worship of Lucifer?
Oh, sure. What goes on in the Skull and Bones, it was founded in 1832 in Yale as a Masonic spinoff after John Quincy Adams banned Freemasons from public office. And basically, their initiation ceremony, and this is like George Bush and Kerry went through this, as did William F. Buckley, they kneel before three figures when they're taken in for their final candidate initiation. And they are three students dressed in costumes. One is dressed as Lucifer with horns. One is dressed as the Pope with his foot on the skull. And one is dressed as a black knight who they call Don Quixote. Now, the initiate comes into physical contact with these three figures. And I describe that very elaborately in Satanic Crime. And that is one of the telltale signs of an initiation ceremony, is when you come in physical, the initiator and the candidate come into physical contact with a sort of mock violence. And ultimately, the Black Knight dubs the candidate a member of the Order of Skull and Bones. Now, what we're looking at here is an inversion of the Christian Trinity of Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. The horned figure is Lucifer. The Pope with his foot on the skull is the Antichrist. And the Black Knight is Satan, which is a title of Lucifer, meaning the accuser. And it is the accuser who dubs the member of the Skull and Bones. Now, in Robert De Niro's movie, he had the older version of this ceremony in The Good Shepherd, where a devil figure would come out and just directly dub you a knight. They kind of evolved the ceremony and watered it down a little, but ultimately their allegiance is to the who Jesus called the prince of this world. Now, as I say, John Kerry, who claims to be a Roman Catholic, now under Roman Catholic Church law, which we call canon law, it is automatic excommunication for a Catholic to belong to a Masonic type secret society. What the Catholic Church law says is that you have excommunicated yourself from the body of Christ. Now, evangelical Christians, and George W. Bush claims to be an evangelical Christian could not belong to such a secret society because such an oath to an infernal figure, like a devil figure, would be contrary to a legitimate Christian conversion experience. And the only way these two men could really make up for this is if they were to renounce the vows they took in the Skull and Bones Society and denounce the organization as to warn others against the evils, and especially other Christians, about the evils of these organizations. To do any less than that, their souls are damned, and it doesn't really matter if they go to Mass every day or church every day or pray with Franklin Graham or pray with a bishop or the Pope or what have you. Until they renounce their vows and denounce the organizations, they are, by their own religious standards, I'm not projecting my religious standards onto them, by their own religious standards, they are damned, and that is the great tragedy of our government. Now, when you consider, when you look at all these organizations I used to kind of like the John F. Kennedy Library here in Boston, that is run by a Skull and Bones member named John Shattuck. That's an old New England name, Shattuck. And the Cato Institute, which I used to greatly admire, this is this great libertarian kind of think tank. Fred Smith, the Skull and Bonesman from Federal Express, is on their board of directors. And, you know, when you look at both our Democratic and Republican Party candidates in our last election, Bush and Kerry were Skull and Bones members, there's really no distinction between any of these organizations or alleged political purviews. It doesn't matter if you're a Democrat, a Republican, or a Libertarian, or a Progressive Liberal, all of the institutions which control these modes of thought are actually controlled by the Skull and Bone Society.
And we find, of course, these people in key positions whenever we go to war, certainly during the Second World War. Why, the Secretary of War was Henry Stimson's Skull and Bones. I mean, then the man who got us involved in Vietnam was McGeorge Bundy, a friend of Stimson and also a member of Skull and Bones. And then, of course, the first Gulf War was George Herbert Walker Bush, a member of Skull and Bones. The present catastrophe in the Middle East was George W. Bush, a member of Skull and Bones. And you'll find these people working within the Central Intelligence Agency, as did William Buckley, supposedly the leader of the conservatives, but he's never been a conservative. They lead both the conservatives and the liberals. And now, how do we know about this ceremony where they have this trinity of evil? Does anybody from the Skull and Bones ever dared to come forward and tell the truth?
Oh, yes. My primary source is another guest you've had on this show called Alexandra Robbins. In her book, Secrets of the Tomb, she spoke with many Skull and Bonesmen who spoke anonymously to her and gave her an entire outline of the ceremony. I also draw from a film, a fellow who was a Yale student. Part of this ceremony takes part in the courtyard of the Skull and Bones, and a fellow climbed onto the building next door and filmed it. And what you see in this is you see the Lucifer figure with horns above a body, and the nude initiate, the candidate, comes over and does some sort of mock ritual sacrifice. Now, you can see this film. I also have a Satanic Crime multimedia page, which you can see at williamhkennedy.com, which goes along with the Satanic Crime book, which, again, that you can order at radioliberty.com. You're carrying it now. People can order it there at your site. But you can see all this, and from these testimonies of anonymous Skull and Bonesmen, and I've confirmed this. I actually know a lot of Skull and Bonesmen, and I know a lot of Bohemian Grove members just through, you know, life experience. And they've confirmed a lot of these ritual-type things take place and confirmed what Alexandra Robbins came out with in her, you know, wonderful book, Secrets of the Tomb, which you carry as well. But it's pretty clear. What we do know about it is pretty solid information, and it's been backed up many, many times. So the bottom line is the Skull and Bone Society is a satanic organization. The members take their vows to a Lucifer figure, and their ultimate goal is the political and economic domination of the human race, and I mean all 6 billion of us on this planet. Now, of the 6 billion of us on this planet, only about 4,000 or 5,000 people actually run things, and about 800 of these 4,000 or 5,000 people are Skull and Bonesmen. Now, they spin off into other organizations like the Bohemian Grove, which I write quite a bit about in Satanic Crime as well. They were founded in 1872 in California, and they worship an owl god in their yearly ceremony, which they have in Northern California.
In fact, if anybody would like, we actually have something published by by Bohemian Grove. We're not supposed to have it, but we were fortunate to get it. And there, in Volume 4, why they show the owl, and then they say quite openly, we worship the owl, in essence. This is what they're saying. This is a 40-foot owl. They do a feigned human sacrifice in front of it every year. And just as with Skull and Bones, at least some of their ceremonies, according to Alexander Robbins, they wear their hoods and their black gowns, and have their candles and their chants. So they have exactly the same thing at the Bohemian Grove. And if you haven't seen the pictures, we actually carry the video that Alex Jones risked his life to take. It's called the Bohemian Grove. And you can actually see in living color here, and actually one of the four segments, an excellent, excellent video, which is why we carry it. You'll actually see the Skull and Bones, pardon me, the Bohemian Grove ceremony. And here are the leaders of our country. Many of the presidents, most of our presidents and vice presidents, and you know, the leaders of the industrial world, the leaders of our media, and the reason you never hear about it is because the leaders of media are there. And basically, of course, they're there participating in this mock human sacrifice. Some of them, of course, wearing the black gowns, the black hoods, in the Bohemian Grove. And really, it's amazing. But anybody would like to, if you doubt that they worship the owl, we'll give you their publication. Know what I say, what they say, and certainly you can get the video. You can get our 4-tape set on the Bohemian Grove, or certainly on the on Skull and Bones. But let me suggest William's book. I think it's excellent. It's called Satanic Crimes. We're going to carry the book. And we have to be a little careful. There's so many books we'd like to carry. We can't carry every book, but this is a very important book. because it goes not only into the skull and bones and of course the Bohemian Grove, but it goes into really this whole network of satanic organizations that actually extend into the highest level of our government. And the FBI is constantly saying they have a man, he does nothing else. We go around and debunk the idea that this is a world satanic conspiracy. Well, William, pick the story up there.
Well, from the Bohemian Grove, that is the other major organization next to the Skull and Bones. Now, I have a big section, the last two chapters of the book deal a lot with a group called the Bilderbergers. Now, the Bilderbergers were founded in the 1950s by European royal families who made an alliance with American industrialists, and they originally met in the Bilderberg Hotel, which was in Holland. And they are a list of the who's who of the elite of the world, really. Most of the royal houses of Europe are members of the Bilderbergers. A lot of Bohemian Grove members and Skull and Bonesmen are also Bilderbergers, like George W. Bush. Henry Kissinger is both a Bohemian Grove member and a Bilderberger. And the list goes on and on. Tony Blair is a Bilderberger. Bill Clinton is a Bilderberger. Edwards, who just announced his candidacy for the presidency of the United States, is a Bilderberger, and on and on and on. Now, my book is the first book, I believe, to link the Bilderbergers with a satanic serial killer named Mark Dutroux. And Mark Dutroux was a fellow who was arrested in the mid-90s, and what he was doing is he used to kidnap young boys and girls and sell them to Bilderberger ritual sex parties. Now, when he was in prison, what happened was during his trial, the judge Jean-Marie Connereau, called for any women who were abused or people who were abused by this Mark Dutroux cult to come forward, and 10 women came forward. One of the women's name was Regina Louf, and Regina Louf claimed to have been sexually abused and kidnapped by Mark Dutroux, and she claims that people who were at these ritual parties were the who's who of Europe, including King Albert II himself of Belgium. And another person who was named a major Bilderberger, who was named as having sex with minors in this whole scandal, was Elio Del Rupo, who is kind of the Barney Frank of the European Union. He is a Belgian gay politician, and he was named as one of these 10 people. Now, what happened?
He was actually named in these court proceedings.
Yes, he was named in these court proceedings for having sex with two young men who are under 16 years of age. A journalist named, his name evades me at the moment, Jean Nicolas, that's it. Jean Nicolas was a Luxembourg reporter, and what he did is he went to Belgium and he had these documents, these testimonies leaked to him. And what happened was Judge Connereau attended a dinner by the parents of victims of Mark Dutroux, who were raising money to hire private detectives to track down missing children to see if they may be part of these satanic sex rings. Now, Judge Connereau showed up, and he had dinner there, but he did not contribute any money to the organization. He just went there for moral support, and he was removed from the case by the government of Belgium in a conflict of interest. It was considered a bribe for him to have an entree and a dessert. So he was removed from the case, and all of these files were scrapped by the judge who replaced him.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Sure. Just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is basically talking about in Europe, of course, in Belgium, there was a sex ring where the young boys and girls were being kidnapped and then turned over to these meetings of some of the most powerful people in Europe, and many of them tied right into the Bilderberger organization. And you've heard us talk about the Bilderbergers in the past, and many of the names were actually brought out in these trial hearings. Everything was done to stop this information from getting out. There was a massive demonstration in Belgium. 350,000 Belgians turned out, all dressed in white. 350,000. I have a clipping that goes into that William had sent me. Not a word of that in the American press. Could you imagine what would happen if 350,000 Americans all turned out dressed in white to protest satanic activity here? But not a word in the United States, because some of the most powerful men in America just happened to belong to this same Bilderberg organization, which is tied into satanic activity.
Oh, it's just quite amazing, Dr. Stan. Now, that was the largest protest against a government in human history. There has never been a larger anti-government protest ever. It was 350,000 people. That is a huge, huge number of people. They all dressed in white, and they all brought white balloons and let them go and let white doves go. And this was in protest of the handling of the Marc Dutroux case. Now, the girl I mentioned, Regina Louf, she actually identified a woman who was murdered, a young girl, a teenager, an underage teenager who was murdered in one of these Bilderberg rituals. She said that a girl named Chrissy at one of these things that Dutroux was on was actually strangled to death in a bizarre ceremony. Now, the details she gave corresponded to a body they found in 1984 of a 15-year-old girl named Christine Van Hees. And Regina Louf gave details of Christine Van Leef's body and what had happened to her and what she was wearing at the time of her death, that they have reopened the investigation. What Regina Louf said was just identical. Only someone who witnessed the murder of this girl, Christine, would have known the details that she gave that the police did not release to the public when they found this body in 1984. So we have a victim of the Bilderberger sex ring who was killed in 1984. And this investigation as well has been stifled by the authorities over there. Now, as I said, the biggest protest in human history against the government, the White March, that received no press over here in the West, and it received quite a bit in Europe. I was living in Europe at the time, and I saw it, and that's why I remember it. But it is just a blank here in the New World. I've talked to people in Mexico and Argentina, in Brazil and Chile, in Ecuador, and Panama, and none of them were aware of this White March at all, you know, just on my internet connections. So this was basically blacked out in the Western media. And as I say, when you consider that, you know, Edwards is a Bilderberg member, and Henry
John Edwards, who's
John Edwards, the presidential candidate, who was the vice presidential candidate under Kerry in the last election. And in fact, he had to kind of, he was being considered a vice presidential candidate, he had to go to a Bilderberg meeting, and when he left, he was given the vice presidential nomination after that. They kind of like have to approve you. He went over there for some sort of approval. I don't know exactly what happened, but when he considered the things that, like Regina Louf said about these murders and bizarre sex rituals, it becomes very, very stunning, you know, and very upsetting.
Well, of course, many of our politicians have to be cleared. For instance, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Warren Buffett took Arnold Schwarzenegger over to meet Lord Rothschild before he was allowed to run for the governorship here in California.
I mean, oh, sure. He was vetted at the Bohemian Grove. That's where they made the final decision.
Right. And so these sort of things go on. People don't say this could not be true. Right here in America, they had another very, very similar situation. It's called the Franklin Cover-Up. There's a book written on that, certainly by John DeCamp. I've tried to get John DeCamp come on our program. He really is not about to come on. He talks in that book about some of the wealthiest men in America were involved in all sorts of perversions and, I mean, illegal activities, but then I mean, when you've got billions of dollars at your disposal, I mean, oh, who is going to challenge you, especially when you're considered to be one of the richest men in America? Well, that's covered in the book, Franklin Cover-Up. Really, are not very many books that really tell you the truth. There's one book called The Ultimate Evil by Maury Torrey. But it's so big, and the beauty of William's book, like my book, is it's short, it's easy to read, and it will give you the information you need to understand what's really going on in this network behind the scenes. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is William Kennedy, and we're talking about his book, Satanic Crimes. And it's a fascinating book, and I think you'll find it very educational. You have to understand. I wish we didn't have to talk about these sort of things, but nobody else is going to tell you about them. And so we think you have to understand that we truly are engaged in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And the trouble is that the power is really all on the other side. The only thing we have going for us is the God of heaven. And if we rely upon him and are worthy of his intervention, he will actually intervene and, I believe, and help us. But is America really worth saving today? Are there enough people who really will take a stand for righteousness? And this is one of the big problems we have because, I mean, we look and see what's going on. Most of our Christians are backing the current administration that backs torture. How could you possibly, as a Christian, back torture? And yes, which one of our Christian leaders have you yet heard stand up and speak out and say, torture of anybody is wrong? Which one of the Christian leaders? You're not going to hear that. So, I mean, basically, will God honor a nation that supports the sort of things that our government is doing today? And why would they be supporting torture? Why would you do that when torture is not an effective means of getting information from people? Why, if you are ultimately evil, why you would support that sort of thing? And tragically, this is the situation where we're headed today. Well, William, you know, certainly, as you have got the information out, you've got a section on Anton LaVey, and of course, I think most people really don't understand who LaVey was, where he got his ideas from, how this all fits in the Crowleyism. So why don't we maybe start out talking about Aleister Crowley, and because I think he is a pivotal character for the understanding of modern-day Satanism.
Oh, sure. I have a whole section on Aleister Crowley in the first chapter of my book, which is entitled A Brief History of Modern Satanism. Crowley was born in England in 1875, and he was the son of a rich brewer. His family brewed ale, and they were pub chain owners. Now, his father died when he was young, and he was a member of the Plymouth Brethren, which were a very strict evangelical group in England. As he got older, he went to Cambridge University, and he rejected the Christianity of his youth, and as a student at Cambridge, he began to study ritual magic and Satanism. Now, he dropped out of college and became an accomplished mountain climber for a while, but
Hold that thought right there. We're going to have to bring our stations back on right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is William Kennedy. We're talking about his book, Satanic Crimes. And we're going to start getting into Aleister Crowley. Aleister Crowley, of course, had been the son of a fairly well-to-do family in England. He had actually gone to Cambridge University. Having come from a Christian family, he was, of course, going to a major university. They destroyed his faith. He rejected Christianity and began to study ritual magic. Now, what's wrong with at least looking into that? Well, a recent Barner poll showed that about 75% of our young people in America today are looking into one or another form of occult. They're dealing with Ouija boards, or certainly playing the Bloody Mary, or they're certainly looking into witchcraft and how you contact this other dimension. And that really is sort of exciting. We see these television programs like The Medium, and The Medium can actually contact the other dimension. I saw an interview the other evening with a fellow named John Edwards, who is a psychic who can, he claims he can contact people. He can actually tell people about their loved ones who are in the other dimension. Of course, he's really dealing with demonic beings. If he has any power at all and the ability to know anything about people, it comes from the other dimension. You're not contacting your ancestors, your loved ones. You're contacting demonic beings who will actually, of course, simulate or will actually pose as the departed loved ones. But so many people are fascinated by this today, and this is how Aleister Crowley started out. So you pick up the story there. Aleister is actually studying ritual magic, and what happened?
Well, what happened there, he started to combine hard drugs like cocaine and masculine and marijuana with ritual sex magic. And in these ceremonies, what he would do is, in the frenzy of sex and drugs in these rituals, he would merge with the god of whatever ritual he was performing. Now, in one of these rituals, he identified himself as Jesus Christ, and in another sex ritual, he identified himself as Satan. Now, what people say, it becomes kind of a form of demonic possession. They claim in the frenzy of this sex magic, they merge with the being they are focusing on, like Satan, and become this being. So what we're really looking at is a form of possession. Colin Wilson, the writer, believes that Crowley was possessed. Now, what Crowley did is he formulated this into a form of ritual magic. He referred to himself as the Great Beast 666. He enjoyed being called that. And what he did is he formed a commune in Sicily where he practiced all of this bizarre sex magic with a band of deranged followers. This was in the 1920s. And what happened was one of his followers died of toxic shock after drinking cat's blood from a silver chalice during one of these sex ritual rites, and he dropped dead a few days after doing this. And Mussolini threw this entire commune out of Italy. And eventually, Crowley traveled to the United States and represented an organization called the Ordo Templi Orientis, or OTO, and he founded branches of this in California. Crowley eventually lost most of his followers. His wives and female sex partners, many of them went mad and committed suicide. One of his closest followers, a guy named Norman Mudd, filled all of his pockets with rocks and walked straight into the Atlantic Ocean and drowned himself. And Crowley eventually died a heroin addict in 1947, and he had had a son, Ataturk Crowley, who was at his side when he died. Now, when Crowley died, he was pretty much forgotten, and then in 1967, the Beatles put him on the cover of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and that caused a huge, huge spike in his popularity, and other bands like Led Zeppelin and AC/DC became interested in Crowleyanity, as he liked to call it. And a big part of what he did was an inversion of Christianity. And he liked to play the role of Jesus and the role of Satan in a lot of these sex rituals, because that way he eclipsed the real God. It's really a recapitulation of what you read in Isaiah 14, which concerns Satan's attempt to overturn heaven and become God. Crowley played on that, and a lot of his followers kind of spun off from that. Now, Anton LaVey was a member of Crowley's OTO lodge that he had formed in Berkeley, California. LaVey began frequenting it in 1947 and met a member there named Kenneth Anger, who was an actor and ritual magician, and they became fast friends. And during the 50s and early 60s, they began to study occultism very intensely, and they held public lectures at Anton LaVey's house. Now, eventually in 1966, Anton LaVey founded the Church of Satan. He shaved his head and declared himself the Black Pope. And he performed a lot of ritual black masses and demonic incantation ceremonies, very much based on Crowley's principles. And he did this along with Kenneth Anger. Now, he published the Satanic Bible in 1969, which became a counterculture classic. People read it for years. I read it when I was 15 years old. Myself, I'm 42 now, and he published his Satanic Rituals a few years later. Now, what LaVey also did, he pimped women all of his life from the late 40s until when he died in 1994. And one of these women he was he recruited into prostitution was Susan Atkins, who he recruited into one of his strip shows that he had called the Witches Review. And Susan Atkins would play the role of a vampiress in this strip show that LaVey had put together, and she would come out of a coffin and she would lure, you know, these sick men who went to witness these strange things in with a, you know, she had a big red fingernail on the end of her index finger. Now, this was kind of a precursor to what she did a few years later. She broke off with LaVey, joined up with Charles Manson, and she murdered Susan Atkins, the actress, during the Tate LaBianca murders, and she actually licked the blood of Sharon Tate, the pregnant actress, off of her fingers. So her work with LaVey was kind of a dress rehearsal for her actual vampirism, which she practiced on Sharon Tate a few years later. Now, Bobby Beausoleil, who was also convicted in the Hinman Tate LaBianca murders with Manson, was also a member of the Church of Satan, and he was even in a film with Anton LaVey called Invocation of My Demon Brother. So you see a lot of murderers directly connected to Anton LaVey.
And what about William Rodriguez?
Richard Rodriguez. Richard Rodriguez, the Night Stalker, he was a Satanist who grew up in Texas. And he actually went to see LaVey in the mid-80s up in San Francisco and participated in a week of rituals, black masses, and spiritual invocation ceremonies where they summoned demons. Now, after he spent that week with LaVey, he went off on a killing spree. He was the Night Stalker murderer. He murdered and raped elderly people. He raped preteen children and let them live because he knew that was worse than murder. And they eventually caught him. He did all of this, Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. He did all of this in the name of Satan, and they eventually arrested him. Now, at his trial, Zena LaVey, who was Anton LaVey's daughter, actually kept showing up at the trial to see what was going on, and people found that very, very strange and very suspicious. It seems as if Anton LaVey ordered him to go out and do these things, so though he would always distance himself from these people. You know, he would get these marginal people who are on the edge and push them over the edge, and they go do crazy things, and then he'd deny, you know, knowing them that well. That was a big part of the game he played. But Zena LaVey showed up at his trial. Now, Richard Ramirez eventually got married to one of his groupies in prison, and he refused to wear a gold ring at their marriage ceremony because he said Satanists don't wear gold. He would wear a silver wedding ring only. So that's a very strange end to the Richard Ramirez story. But there again, he was directly tied to Anton LaVey. Now, the other serial killer directly tied with LaVey was a guy named Tom Creech, who was a very early member of the Church of Satan, right when it was founded in 1966. He attended black masses and invocation ceremonies for the first 10 months of the church. Now, he was arrested in 1975 for the murder of two brothers, and what he told police was quite stunning. He said he was an assassin and a hitman for a satanic cult, and that he was out murdering these people in a ritual murder spree, and that he was actually part of a much larger satanic organization. Now, the police have just ignored his claims and said they really can't prove or disprove it, but that is four serial killers who knew Anton LaVey personally. And that's not to mention all the spin-off people like Joe Fiorella, who murdered a girl, Elise Pollard, and performed an act of necrophilia on her body, ritual sex with the dead. And when they arrested Joe Fiorella, he had a Church of Satan priest card in his pocket. He was a member of the Church of Satan, and the knife he used to murder Elise Pollard was purchased from an online service called Maledicta, which sold ritual knives to the general public. This all occurred in 1995, right when the internet was just getting into gear. He did purchase this knife from a Church of Satan-affiliated website, and when they arrested him, he had a Church of Satan membership card in his pocket. Yet when this was all reported in the popular press, they downplayed the satanic aspects. So there's a fifth person connected to the Church of Satan.
Well, no, but of course we find the Federal Bureau of Investigation really intentionally downplays all of that as well, don't they?
Well, I was one of the fools who fell for the 1993 Lanning Report, which basically disavowed all satanic ritual cases. Now, I will give you clear and distinct satanic cases, right, in satanic crime that are incontrovertible. You know, I cover the case of Father Gerald Robinson, who was just sent to prison for the ritual satanic murder of a nun in 1980. I mean, the evidence I've accumulated is incontrovertible. Now, this fellow the FBI sends out to debunk this, he's just a disinformation agent who, he'll go out there and ridicule, like, Ted Gunderson, who's a good former FBI man who acknowledges that these satanic crimes occur. But this clown they send out there, he's really a parody of himself now. No one takes him seriously, because the amount of satanic crimes, as you see in, like, the Columbine shootings, or Jeff Weiss, who shot up the Indian reservation, these people were Satanists. There's no two ways about it. There's no way to disprove it. So the fact that the FBI goes around denying and debunking satanic crime, you have to remember that the FBI also denied the existence of the Sicilian Mafia for over 30 years. I mean, that's an amazing thing. J. Edgar Hoover, who was, given the security of this country, refused to acknowledge the existence of the Sicilian Mafia for 30 years. The Five Families of New York took off. They're also a Luciferian group. They do a weird initiation ritual, but they control the labor unions, drugs, cocaine, gambling. The FBI denied their existence until they got so powerful it didn't matter if they denied their existence or not. They were so ingrained that it really didn't matter what the federal government did. And that's the same thing that's happening with satanic crime. The government is denying its existence, and they're allowing it to get stronger and stronger, the same way they did with the Sicilian Mafia. And that is really a crime against the American people, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, the thing is that this is not imaginary. It's really very real. There is a spiritual battle that's taking place for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And the average person has no idea that this sort of thing really goes on. And the frightening thing is that many of these people, frankly, give themselves over to Satan. And you get into David Berkowitz, who is part of a satanic group in New York City. And I don't know, there were six or seven people killed. He admits he killed a couple of them. The others were killed by other members of this satanic group. And the government there steadfastly refused to investigate it. Now, there were some people. There was certainly some people in law enforcement who knew what was going on and tried to bring it out. And they were blocked at every turn. And the question is, why would they block efforts to bring out the fact that there were still murderers on the loose out there who were part of this same satanic group that David Berkowitz was? And David Berkowitz has now become a Christian and will talk openly about this. He wouldn't for many years for fear of his life. And I guess now he has more fear of the Lord than he has of the this secret society he was part of, the secret satanic cult. But this is the most amazing thing, that the law enforcement absolutely refused, the key people in law enforcement, refused to pursue the murderers.
Oh, right. I mean, when you even look at the artist depictions of the murderers and the Son of Sam serial killers from the different murders, there are a set of them that look nothing like David Berkowitz. They look like completely different people. These are eyewitness accounts. When you look at all of the artist sketch of the one supposed murderer, they look like entirely different people. So you have clear and distinct and direct evidence right there. The police, again, without police complicity, none of these things would go on. They downplay the nature of satanic crime. They really don't put much on it. The mainstream media refuses just to acknowledge it. They will never talk about it. For example, in the case of Jeff Weiss, the boy who shot up the Indian reservation, a woman named Neva Rogers, who was a teacher there. Weiss was going around asking people, do you believe in God? If you said yes, he would shoot you. If you said no, he would spare your life. He walked up to Neva Rogers and said, do you believe in God? And she was a Christian woman, a teacher, 61 years old, and she said, God be with us. And Jeff Weiss shot her dead. The Satanist shot her dead. Now, the mainstream media, you probably never even heard, or the audience never even heard the name Neva Rogers. They will never tell you about a Christian martyr who died in such a fashion, but they will, you know, constantly talk about Ted Haggard, you know, an evangelical Christian who made a lot of mistakes, but you will never hear the word Neva Rogers in the mainstream media, who was a Christian martyr who died for her faith. She passed the ultimate stress test when someone points a gun at you and asks you, do you believe in God? And you say, God be with us. You are a Christian martyr at that junction, but you will not hear about this on CNN.
Do you cover the story of the Green Beret captain who, you know, the satanic cult killed his
McDonald,
wife?
I don't cover the McDonald case in this book because it's an older case, but I believe Gregory McDonald was innocent of the murder of his family. That was a hippie satanic cult. And Ted Gunderson's done stuff with that.
And, of course, the thing is that the prosecutor knew that he was innocent and sent him to prison to cover for the satanic cult. That's the story. Is Jeffrey McDonald?
Yes, Jeffrey McDonald,
Jeffrey
the Green Beret killer.
That's a fascinating thing. And recently somebody's come forward who was there, who heard the confession and... Oh, but, of course, Jeffrey, he's still in prison. We wouldn't want to embarrass the Satanists, would we?
Oh, no.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is William Kennedy. And go ahead now, of course. There's so many stories out here. And, of course, they all point to the same situation. And these organizations permeate every aspect of our society. When you were doing the study on Aleister Crowley, did you get at all into his relationship to Masonry?
Oh, yes, I did, and I have a whole page on my webpage, williamhkennedy.com, called Crowley's Cults. The first organization Crowley joined was the Freemasons. That was the first secret society he belonged to. He received his 33rd degree, Freemason degree in Mexico, a few years after he joined as a fairly young man. In the OTO, the Ordo Templi Orientis, you had to be a 33-degree Mason to originally to join that organization, and that was a continuation of Freemasonry. It was like the 34th, 35th, and 36th degrees. Freemasonry, as normally known, has 33rd degrees, but the founders of the OTO, Royce and Kellner, they wanted to go beyond that. And beyond the 33rd degree into the OTO, you get into a sex magic, with, like I talked about earlier. Now, Freemasonry permeates a great deal of Crowley's outlook, and it's quite amazing how he carried Freemasonry through a great deal of his work, even integrating it into his sex magic. Now, the Freemasons are a very, very bizarre organization. I don't like them. I mean, when you consider that 200 men a year at Harvard University join the Freemasons, and they're a very powerful organization in the world, and a lot of these groups we look at, like the Skull and Bones and Bohemian Grove, and even to a certain extent the Bilderbergers, are spinoffs of Freemasonry, and that is ultimately what is behind it. Now, Freemasonry ultimately worships Lucifer as a god within its theology, and it has a lot of rituals where it does things to overturn Christianity.
But
rituals.
Of course, the average Mason really doesn't understand that. The average Mason really, don't you think, is used.
Well, no, the average Mason only goes to the third degree of Freemasonry, the third degree Mason. And there are 30 degrees beyond that, which they know nothing about. They are never, not even allowed to study them.
Well, William, we could probably go on for another hour, but unfortunately, time has caught up with us. So I'm going to thank you so very much again for being with us. And, of course, the website is williamkennedy.com.
Williamhkennedy.com.
Williamhkennedy.com. God bless you. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Good night. Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. If you'd like to get to William's website, it's williamhkennedy.com. That's www.williamhkennedy.com. He's got a lot of great information there. Now, you know, certainly we're going to be carrying his books, Satanic Crimes. We do have them in. Last time we had them on, a book wasn't out yet, but we do have the book in and available through Radio Liberty by calling 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And if you're interested in knowing about the Bohemian Grove, we have an excellent video where you'll actually see the occult ceremonies attended by the nation's leaders. We have a 4-tape set on Bohemian Grove. And if any of you would like actually those pages from the writings, from the books actually published by the Bohemian Grove that talks about the worship of the owl. What is the owl? That's Moloch. That's a satanic symbol, an ancient satanic symbol of worship for those people within the ancient mystery religions. And then, of course, we have information on Skull and Bones. We actually have the membership list is published by the Skull and Bones. We're not supposed to have it, but we have it available. We have, of course, my 4-tape set on Skull and Bones. We carry Alexander Robbins' excellent book, Secrets of the Tomb. We have, of course, a book fleshing out Skull and Bones, and then one on the American Establishment by Professor Sutton. So we can give you an excellent overview of these two organizations. But certainly for an excellent summary of the satanic movement as it exists in America today. Why Satanism, or Satanic Crimes by William Kennedy, we recommend. It's easy reading, it's got big print, and it has the advantage of not being so complicated. And then if you want to get any more of the information, you can find it out. Now, why would anybody want to know about this thing? Because if you do not recognize that this permeates every aspect of our society. And how do we put this all together? Well, there's a wonderful DVD we carry. It's called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And this goes into the fact that when America was created, there were two forces here. One was the Christian, the other was the satanic. And initially, the Christian was the dominant force. Today, the satanic is the dominant force, and the fact that you never hear about this, you never hear that in Washington, D.C. today, there are over 23 zodiacs in government buildings, and over 1,000 figures from the zodiac all over the nation's capital, because, of course, the Satanists, those people involved with astrology and the other occult sciences are there, working, using America's wealth and military power to bring about a one world order and a new world religion. And what's going on over in the Middle East is really sort of human sacrifices in this bloodlust that goes on and has gone on down through the ages, because Satan relishes this sort of horror and violence which war brings about. And not only that, but of course, what's going on in Iraq is a great diversion, so we are thinking about what's going on here at home. As our freedom is being usurped, as our leaders are doing away with our national sovereignty, opening up our borders, encouraging illegal immigration, the goal is to merge America into the North American Union, to destroy our economy, to impoverish our people. And if you're not involved, why then you're part of the problem. And so our plea to you is go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, start getting our information, get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, the things we've talked about tonight. Begin to understand what this is about, and then, like Paul Revere of old, get out there and start telling people that it's not that the redcoats are coming. The Satanists are already here. They're working at the highest levels of government, and they're being covered up by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, that organization that we depend on for our security. Understand, of course, what's going on. Our website is RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. If you want to see the influence of Aleister Crowley in music, we have some wonderful videos. They're called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. You can get the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. You'll see, of course, the Beatles and their Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Band. There, of course, the cover of their album with Aleister Crowley there. And a number, of course, the various groups put Aleister Crowley on the cover. You'll actually see Ozzy Osbourne and Marilyn Manson singing to Aleister Crowley. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927, and pray for America. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, of course, for this evening, for this hour, we're hoping to have Barry Shamish with us, and we're going to be talking about what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on in the Near East, and the great tragedy we're seeing unfolding there, as the United States is doing everything we can to build up the military power of Egypt, and apparently Egypt has sent many of its howitzer weapons here to the United States, refurbishing them, so that in preparation for Egypt's coming war with Israel. We're shipping large numbers of rifles into the Palestinian Liberation Army. Those are the ones that work with the Fatah. So they can use those rifles in combination in their battle with Hamas. But what people really don't understand is the United States and Israel created Hamas many years ago because they wanted to have a fundamental Islamic movement that would be anti-communist. And so they financed Hamas. And this is covered in a book we carry, entitled The Devil's Game by Robert Dreyfus. We think it's a very important book. You need to understand that the United States and the CIA have created this whole radical Islamic movement. The United States actually was instrumental in toppling the Shah and bringing the radical Ayatollahs to power back in 1979. You say, why would they do that? Well, very simply, this is long-term planning. You and I think in terms of days or weeks or months or years. These people think in generations because, of course, there are powerful spiritual forces within the CIA. There's a segment of this always controlled by the skull and bones we were just talking about. And certainly these dark spiritual forces are at work within the CIA, motivating them to do terrible, terrible things. But it is always in the name, of course, of moving us towards this one-world government, which I believe, of course, is going to be ruled by the dark side. Well, of course, then we can look up to the north of Israel, where, of course, the Hezbollah, which is being funded by Iran and by Syria. And Hezbollah, of course, is locked in a power struggle with the Lebanese government. And then Lebanon is locked in a power struggle with Syria. And Syria and Iran, of course, are joining forces so that if America does go to war over there, expand the war, why, of course, we will be going to war with both Syria and Iran. And when that happens, of course, why then the Iranians will whip up the frenzy of the Shias there in the southern part of Iraq, and they'll be even more ferocious in their attack on the American troops. So we're going to leave there. And ladies and gentlemen, if you think we're going to pull our troops out of Iraq, why, you've been listening to Rush Limbaugh for too long. I mean, what is the current plan? Well, we're going to increase the number of troops in Iraq so that we can pull our troops out. And if you don't think that makes sense, why, you obviously have been thinking too long. You know, of course, it's like we went to war with Afghanistan to capture Osama bin Laden. If you don't believe that, why, you're questioning the nobility of our cause. We went there to capture Osama bin Laden? No, we didn't. I mean, in fact, we carry a book called Crude Politics that tells you that the special forces wanted to get Osama bin Laden. They wanted to capture him when he was trapped at Tora Bora Mountains in December of 2001, and the administration wouldn't let them go after Osama bin Laden. The question is, why? Why would they let him go after Osama bin Laden? Why would they let them destroy al-Qaeda? And we have an article, we'd be glad to send any of your copies of it, where a high government official at that time, October 7th, 2001, said, we're not trying to get Osama bin Laden. If we got Osama bin Laden, how could we justify this war? We're going to be back here in just a moment with Barry Shamish as we look at what's going on in the Middle East from the point of view of an Israeli patriot. Hi, Barry. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I've got the flu.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. What, are you going to be able to stay with us for a while?
No, I've planned this very well. I'll figure out how to overcome.
All right, fine. Well, of course, if it got to me, I would have told you what to do to get over it. And the first thing you want to do is get large doses of vitamin D, because vitamin D is very specific for this, and some elderberry juice and a little oil of oregano, and it'll snap right out of it. But right now, of course, you're not going to have time to go out and get that, because you've got to bring us up to date with what's going on in the Middle
East. I'm
going to
do a very important show. Let me be a little loose, and I'm going to explain finally why Paris took over the government and why he's going to bring it down. I don't know if it's going to help, but at least we'll try and tell the real story of why the Vatican would bother with all this.
I mean, for our listeners there, what's the connection to the Vatican?
Look, let's start from the beginning.
All right, fine. You start from the beginning. Go ahead.
Let's look at the last 2 weeks of insanity. And I've, on my last appearance in your show, I took care of a certain amount of it. But let's just remember that Henry Kissinger becomes named a papal advisor. Okay? Within 2 days, Ehud Olmert, after Henry Kissinger, of course, a Jew, is named an advisor to the Holy See. I mean, let's not lose our sense of irony about this. It doesn't happen every day. So what is this head honcho of the Council of Foreign Relations doing with the Pope? Within 2 days, we find out why Olmert is invited to the Vatican. Now, Olmert knows that he's in trouble on a couple of issues, because the Vatican have been at play in Israel very, very big time all year long. And the main issue that they helped destroy the presidency of Katzav, who is now, of course, awaiting trial for rape. Not that he did or didn't do it, but they ruined him. They made sure of it. Was because Katsav refused to negotiate, as if he had the right, as president of Israel, over what's known as the Last Supper Room. The Vatican wants this Last Supper Room. Now, it's on Mount Zion, and it's parallel to a church we'll talk about shortly, the Domitian Abbey. It's very important that you recall that the Vatican owned the highest church in all Jerusalem, the Domitian Abbey atop Mount Zion, erected in 1906.
Now, is that the one with the sort of pointed roof there?
I don't know how to describe it. It's got a tower. It's a duplicate. It's a duplicate of Charlemagne's
first three right
people.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Barry Shamish. Barry Shamish is talking about what's going on, and he just says that, you know, I want you to stop and think about it. Here we have Henry Kissinger, who is a Jew, who is appointed advisor to the Vatican. And then a couple of days later, why, we suddenly learn that Olmert, who's the prime minister of Israel, is going to be flying to the Vatican. Why is he flying to the Vatican? Well, because, of course, when you go to visit somebody, that means you're submissive to them. So why would a Jew, Olmert, the president or premier of Israel, be flying to the Vatican? So you pick the story up there, Barry.
All right. Now, once again, this is the second reason for the visit. And that second reason is called the Spanish Initiative. Our Jesuit-trained former king of Spain, King Juan Carlos, has a terrific idea. The IDF will pull out of Gaza and will be replaced by troops, well, Catholic troops, Italian, Spanish, German, French, just like you've got in southern Lebanon today. So the Crusades are really on now. And they're serious. They want the IDF out of Gaza. And the IDF cannot win in Gaza. These are instructions from the Vatican.
Now, for our listeners, the IDF are the Jewish troops. So that is the Israeli troops. Go ahead.
Israel Defense Force.
Right.
Now, it looks like Olmert didn't like this idea. And we can guess this because something truthfully fantastic happens when he arrives in Rome. Now, I want you to know something. I don't know why this wasn't reported everywhere. It's so terrifying. The implications are so awful. The city of Rome had ordered its police department not to guard any more Jewish or Israeli institutions. Olmert arrives in the city with a police guard essential to El Al, to the embassy, to the synagogues, to the schools. They're all gone.
And I think for our listeners out there, what this is significant is that for many years there have been police guards on the Al Al, which is the Israeli airline for the embassy, for the Israeli school there, because this is how they've kept the terrorists from attacking Israeli centers in the city of Rome. And so this has been going on for many years. The police have always guarded them. And suddenly, when Olmert is going to come, the premier of Israel is going to come to visit the Pope, suddenly all of the police guards that are protecting the Jewish centers there in Rome are removed. It's almost like they're sending a message to Olmert, isn't it?
Well, of course they're sending a message. And the message is pretty obvious to the Mossad who were traveling with Olmert. They went crazy. The head of El Al demanded a meeting immediately. The message is that all they have to do is lift one phone call to a few Muslim leaders, maybe a few phone calls to a few Muslim leaders, and the next thing you know, Rome's got a pogrom out of control. Rome's got Kristallnacht. The message is pretty obvious. Now, the power to do this, it came from the Vatican. Where else did it come from? Rome police on their own decide to do this. Now, this message, whatever it was, you can be sure that Olmert obeyed, because look at his behavior when he got back to Israel. Now, remember, he's arriving in a hurricane of Qassams. About 60 of them have been dropped on Israel since his peace fire of a couple of weeks before was initiated. The city of Sderot is abandoned now. Israel has lost another city. And you heard what I said. It's abandoned.
All right. Now, basically, these are the rockets that are coming in from Gaza. And, of course, Olmert is preventing the Israeli Defense Force from going after the people who's firing the rockets in. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, it does if you know that he's now taking orders from the Vatican. That makes a lot of sense. But on we go. He arranges a meeting with Mahmoud Abbas. Now, really, we don't know who he is. We don't know who Mahmoud Abbas is. We know he lost an election. I think that might make him, you know, like, loyal leader of the opposition or something, but he's certainly no leader of anybody.
Yeah, now, basically, he's a Palestinian who lost to Hamas. So.
Yeah, so he has the meeting, but there's significance for the first and ugly, horrible time in Israeli history. The prime minister greets him with a Palestinian flag waving over Jewish territory, the prime minister's residence. Okay, no one's done that before. No one has done that before. And the significance was not missed. But what does he give Abbas? Now, we're missing one corporal who I believe, and have proven anyways, was kidnapped because we wanted him kidnapped. It looks like we started the war, but it doesn't matter. We have one colonel, Corporal Shalit, and we can't get him back, but the PLO is going to get back on behalf of all of the Palestinians. Hamas, Islamic Jihad, doesn't matter. They're going to get back like 1,400 prisoners. And, oh, you'll excuse me with this cough. And Israel gets back nothing. Now, who does this? Who does this? That's the first thing. But then he shovels over $100 million. $100 million, you know, I'm going to tell you what's ironic about that, because the approximate same amount was cut from the religious Zionist school system. He bankrupted the educational system of religious Zionists. They no longer have teachers. They're finished. He just cut the rug from under them. They're done. Instead, he's going to hand it over, about $100 million, to the PLO. Now, this is insanity, obviously. And he's ordering the army to not shoot Qassam launchers. We know this, though. This is everything possible to destroy the army. But he makes one move that it's going to be voted on this week. It was actually delayed. He agrees to lift all the roadblocks. The roadblocks guarding Israel's cities from the terrorists of the West Bank, he's going to lift them. He's going to make the Jews as helpless and as naked as they were in Rome a couple days before his meeting. He's going to make the Jews of Israel helpless to defend themselves.
Well, Chris, now this is going to be sold, Barry, under the idea that if we're just nice to the Palestinians, then they'll be nice to us. I mean, that is
nothing sold that way. No one's buying it.
Well, I hope not.
That's gone. Those days are finished now.
But do the Israelis, why would the Israelis put up with this?
They're not putting up with it. They're going crazy. The army's going crazy. Everybody's going crazy. But the Israeli people are just so worn down that they'll let the terrorists actually come into their homes, rape their wives, children, the whole thing. The Israeli people have been made uniquely stupid. But that's not the point. The army is really objecting to this, and they're going to discuss it next week. Olmert's intention is to let Israel's cities be helpless against terrorism. This order came from the Holy See. It came just a few days before. Now we're going to find out what's really going on in Israel. Be prepared, people. I'm going to do this slowly. Number one, you can read it in great deal. I have a new book called Bye Bye Gaza. It's at lulu.com. You type in lulu.com, then write in the name Chamish, Chamish, in search, and you'll get to Bye Bye Gaza. I don't have a copy. I haven't seen the book. They print it. They'll send it to you, and you can download for cheap. This next part is how the Vatican have finally taken over Israel through Shimon Peres. Shimon Peres is their agent. And I don't know how many years now I've been saying the same thing, but I'm going to give you background. Even if I've said this on the show, even if someone else has heard me, you have to understand this. We have not just guesswork. We have solid proof about Peres' ties to the Vatican. Now, I interviewed Ron Pundak. He was one of the two negotiators of the Oslo Accord. I and my partner at the time, Joel Bainerman. We had a newsletter called Inside Israel. I had a friend who was very close buddies with him. He arranged the interview. He shows up, and he's just a little shrimp. The guy's about 5'4". He's a shrimp. And he starts bragging. He thinks that we're really, really, really sympathetic towards him. And he starts telling us these horrible things. Okay, he tells us that the ultimate goal of Oslo is Israel without a borders, because his boss, Yossi Beilin, doesn't believe in borders. They cause wars. No one's going to have borders. We're going to be a giant trading bloc. He starts talking nonsense that I had never heard. Now I know he's telling the truth. But back then, I'd never heard of such a thing. And Israel without borders doesn't exist. And he tells us that's the ultimate goal of Oslo. So I've been screaming that these people are insane for years. And you should see what they got planned for Israel. But he tells me something else that's very important. He says that Shimon Peres had nothing whatsoever to do with Oslo. It was Rabin and Beilin kept Oslo from Peres because they knew he'd sabotage it. Now, we don't know how he would sabotage it. But now we do. Now we know what they were afraid of. Because Peres discovered Oslo only in April of 1993. Until then, from January until April, there were only five people, Israelis, who knew about Oslo. The entire CFR knew about Oslo, as Ron Pundak told me. I was in contact with Warren Christopher from the first night of the negotiations. So the business with Clinton being shocked by these negotiations was all fake. They all knew they would take a place. It was a CFR deal. However, let's stick to the point. Peres was not part of Oslo. We'll come back to that point.
All right, fine. Well, our guest this evening is Barry Chamish. And of course, you want to go to his website. That's the www.thebarrychamish website. Is that it?
Yep, TheBarryChamishWebsite.com.
TheBarryChamishWebsite.com. Barry's got a lot of great information there, and of course he's got more books that you can stick out. He's been on the front lines of this battle for a long time, fighting as an Israeli patriot to try to save his country. His family's still there. He can't go back. There's been attempts on his life, so he's living in Canada at the present time, but trying to sound the alarm. He fears that Israel is on the verge of destruction. Okay, Barry, pick up the story.
All right. Peres finally, in mid-April, or the end of April, decides that Oslo is for real and he's been used as a dupe and he's been kept out of the real diplomacy. So he does something really spectacularly disgusting, but we have proof of how low he'll sink. We have proof in the form of an interview in a magazine called Shishi, which went broke very fast afterwards, with Marek Halter, a close friend of Shimon Peres, a French intellectual, who said that he delivered a note in May of 1993 from Peres to the Holy See. And in that note, he offered the Pope all of Eastern Jerusalem. The Vatican will take hegemony over all holy sites of all religions. Now, this is bad enough, and it gets worse, because we find out from La Stampa magazine, a large Italian magazine, that Arafat agreed to this because he was promised a capital in the Vatican's enclave, and he signed the agreement 3 days before the Declaration of Principles. What this deal did is it turned Jerusalem into the world's largest duty-free shop. Anyone from anywhere can land in Jerusalem without a passport, buy goods without taxes. This was Peres' insane dream for Jerusalem. Now, that, of course, is a very worrisome factor that our foreign minister has offered the Pope Eastern Jerusalem. But we got that now from two newspapers. But the next year, February of 1995, the whole thing flew out into the Israeli public, and here's why. It was a leak. I know who did the leaking. He leaked important things to me, including the secret clauses of Oslo. We don't want to name him. Someday maybe I can. Nonetheless, this leak was a cable sent from the foreign ministry to, hold on 1 second. That's me sneezing. That's the flu. I'm sorry. From the foreign, the embassy in Rome to the foreign ministry in Jerusalem, outlining the handover of East Jerusalem's sovereignty to the Vatican. This cable was given to Arut Sheva, which back then was a hugely popular radio station. Today it's a website without nearly its influence. It doesn't have the influence it once had. They shut it down. It's another topic in repression of Israel, but neither here nor there. All of a sudden, they announce that we've got the cable. This maniac, Peres, is giving Jerusalem to the Pope. And the next day, and here's the clincher, in Haaretz, that's Israel's New York Times. It's going broke. Nobody reads it, but it's always quoted because it seems to support the establishment. There is the cable on the front page of the Friday weekend edition. Peres' foreign ministry has promised the Vatican the old city of Jerusalem all the way to Atarot Airport. Now, this happened around Passover of 1995, and every year Peres goes to the rabbis and sits at their Passover tables. It's an old tradition. This year, all the rabbis canceled him. As soon as that thing appeared in the paper, all the rabbis canceled the dinner invitations. Now, obviously, Peres can't allow this to go on forever. Now, here's how he gets out of it. He announces, his foreign ministry spokesman announces, that yes...
Hold that thought, Barry. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Barry is telling us that in 1995, why Peres offered to give the Vatican all of Eastern Jerusalem. They would have, this would be certainly their enclave. It would be a duty-free area. And Arafat went along with it because they promised to give Arafat an area there and the Eastern Jerusalem for his capital. And, of course, Peres can't possibly, without the permission of Knesset or the Israeli people, give up Eastern Jerusalem. But you see, he's a politician. He doesn't care what the people think any more than the people in Washington, D.C. really care what you think. And so Peres has offered to give up what the Jewish people have fought and so many have died for, and that is control of the eastern half of Jerusalem. You pick the story up there, Jerry.
All right. Peres, of course, now at this moment is overseeing the end of Israel, which was always his mission, but we have to go to his excuse for the cable. You now have the Israeli public reading this piece of perfidy, this cable of the ultimate deceit by their foreign minister, that he's going to hand over the capital to the Vatican. And the rabbis canceled their invitations for him to drop by for Passover dinner. So Peres has to respond to get his invitations back. And here was the response. Yes, the cable in Haaretz was real. But somebody had whited out, had tippex, the word not. And in fact, this cable said that we would not be handing over hegemony of the Old City to the Vatican. Now listen, that's a very, very urgent cable. I mean, I suppose you got cables from Copenhagen and Pyongyang and Taipei, everywhere. We're not going to hand over hegemony of the Old City of Jerusalem to their capital. Look, to show you the utter lack of sophistication of Israel's rabbis, they reinvited him back to the table. They bought this hokey excuse. Now, what happened last year was that Peres got thrown out of the leadership of the Labour Party. And a lot of people say that that was on the 10th anniversary of the Rabin assassination. When I went on TV, national TV, four times in a week, each time saying he was the murderer, a lot of people told me from the Labour Party they did not vote Peres because they heard on the first time from me that he was the murderer. And who wins? Really, a dope named Amir Peres. He's our now defense minister. Neither here nor there. Peres is no longer in politics. He's finished. So he's got to come up with something good. And that something good was to convince his good friend, Ariel Sharon, to start a new party called Kadima, in which he would be second in power. And that's how he is now second in power in the country. Sharon would not let Peres run rampant. He would not let him run rampant for the Vatican. Or at least maybe Peres didn't want the thought of having someone in front of him. He killed Sharon. And this is the murder where I think I got into a lot of trouble. But the core of the issue is that Sharon drank tea for half an hour with Peres in the Knesset all by the lonesome, and then he collapsed. He was taken into Hadassah Hospital by Yoram Rubin. Yoram Rubin pulled the trigger on Rabin. He was the personal bodyguard who murdered Yitzhak Rabin. Never forget the name, Yoram Rubin, as long as you live. He was the murderer of Rabin. And by the way, I'm putting up my book, Who Murdered Yitzhak Rabin, on Lulu.com in the next two or three days, with all of the graphics I've been saving my computer for a whole long time. Maybe look at that as well. Peres knocked him off Rabin, and now he knocked off Sharon, except Sharon, I guess, didn't drink enough tea. He used the same gang to bring Sharon into the hospital. Sharon wasn't poisoned enough. The doctors noticed that he had something called CA, which is weakened blood vessels in the brain. And what they give him Kexane, a blood thinner guaranteed to cause a cerebral hemorrhage. And they told him to go to his farm in the Negev without a doctor and don't check your blood. The last person to see Sharon alive before the cerebral hemorrhage on January 3rd was Ehud Olmert. Olmert brought with him papers that let him take over the prime ministership of the country while Sharon was in Hadassah Hospital for a minor operation the next day. Based on those papers and the murder of Sharon, Olmert is now the prime minister of Israel. He wasn't even number 40 in the Likud list. That's how Peres got the most crooked, corrupt politician to become prime minister of Israel. Now, oh, I hear the music.
Go right ahead, I'll tell you when to stop.
All right, Shimon Peres right now is the Prime Minister of Israel. He is the effective Prime Minister. After the election, Peres, 6 days afterwards, took a trip to Rome and met with the Pope. There he received the instructions, let Olmert take the public bad stuff, the dirty laundry. Stay in the background. We need you.
All right, Mirza, now, Chris, why Olmert is the number, is the Prime Minister. What is Peres's position?
He's running the... He's Deputy Prime Minister.
Okay, hold on. We'll be right back. All right, fine. Well, then we've got Perez as the Deputy Prime Minister. He seems to have a very close relationship with the Vatican, so pick the story up from there.
He's not a close relationship. He's a spy.
All right.
Now, let's not fool with this. He has been planted in by the Vatican inside Israel for a very long time, and he's been doing tremendous damage in this long time. Now he is happy. I mean, what was it, 3 days ago, he's in Seville, Spain, telling the assembled Spaniards that he's in favor of negotiating with Hamas, that they're going to play a big role in the Middle East. Who is he, our Deputy Prime Minister, to give a brand new negotiating diplomacy to his Spanish friends? Look, Perez right now is tickled pink. Every Qassam gives him goosebumps. He's getting his way. The old man is going to destroy Israel. That's what he was always meant to do, and he's going to do it. Now I'm going to do something to your listeners, and please listen to me carefully when I say this. What is the Vatican doing in Jerusalem? Why is it so important for the Vatican to take Jerusalem and take Israel back? Now, right now, they're working with the CFR. That's why they brought Henry Kissinger in. There was a rivalry. That's for sure, that there is a rivalry, but they work together all the time. All the time. Bush goes to see the Pope before he makes Middle East decisions. Everybody does. Now we've got, I'm going to tell you about something fantastic. And this fantastic gives away the ship. In 1898, Count Wilhelm, the leader of Germany, went to Jerusalem. There he consecrated three new churches, but one was uniquely important. It was on the highest point of Mount Zion, called the Dormition Abbey. It was designed to be an exact, almost exact duplicate. I've shown the pictures, it's very close, of Charlemagne's cathedral in Aachen, Germany. Charlemagne, when he united Europe and made it the Vatican's first empire, was built a cathedral in Aachen, Germany. That was now being rebuilt on top of Mount Zion. Charlemagne's empire was being rebuilt. The Holy Roman Empire of the German nation was being rebuilt on top of Mount Zion. This began in 1898. Now look, this is so important. Go look it up yourself. Charlemagne was named.
Hold that, because I want all of our listeners to hear that. And so we'll be bringing them all back on board here in just about 5 seconds. You hang on to that thought, and we'll be right back here with Barry Shamish. All right, well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is going to try to tie all the what's going on together for us. He says that, you know, back before the First World War, we were talking about the late 1800s, early 1900s, the Kaiser Wilhelm of Germany went to Israel, and he dedicated an abbey there on Mount Zion, which was built as a replica of the abbey which had been built at the time of Charlemagne, where Charlemagne was tied into this Holy Roman Empire. Now, we're talking about, 800. And of course, many, from the Christian point of view, many people believe that we are in the process of reconstituting the Holy Roman Empire. So, under any circumstances, here's Kaiser Wilhelm, prior to the First World War, going to Israel, going to Jerusalem and dedicating this abbey, which today still sits there on Mount Zion. So you pick the story up there, Barry.
Well, it will always sit there. I suppose it looks mighty permanent to me. But nonetheless, everyone sees it. When you drive by Mount Zion, there it is. Now, what we have is the Holy Roman Empire of the German nation was the Vatican's military arm. Germany was always the Vatican's military arm. And people don't understand this for some reason. The Vatican don't have an army. What they have is Germany. Okay, now what we've got is something fantastic happened, and it went through the entire Arab nation. Charlemagne was named King of Jerusalem. Look it up. No explaining it. He was never in the Middle East. He was never in Jerusalem. The Arab world, the Muslim world, declared him to be King of Jerusalem. Now, who knows what that diplomacy was all about? but he was the official king of Jerusalem.
Was this back in 800?
Yes, it was.
All right, fine. Yeah. I remember, of course, by then Muhammad was dead. Muhammad, I think, had been born in the early 600s, and he was certainly dead by just shortly after the middle 600s.
So. They were afraid of the Christians.
All right.
They were afraid of this new army, and they appeased him. That's all. Okay, the Muslims appeased the Christians, made him king of Jerusalem, but it didn't matter because there came a point where the influence, and for whatever reason there were crusades. This is not the time to talk about why there were crusades. It wasn't long before Frederick Barbarossa was the actual king of Jerusalem. The Germans won their capital. They were the kings of Jerusalem for a very short time. The famous one was Frederick Barbarossa. The fact of the matter is the Vatican considers Jerusalem its own territory. Never forget that for one second. Now, there was a rivalry. I'm going to push this up now. Now, there's all kinds of stuff in between. You know, I did a CD-ROM, and I have only one copy left. George Forfa was supposed to send me about 20, but your engineer, but they never arrived. But if anyone wants, I'll figure out a way to copy them, and I'll send you my CD about the new campaign for Jerusalem. Now we go forward, way forward. Oh, yeah, my email address, if you're really interested in that, Chamish, Chamish, at netvision, one word, netvision.net, net.il, Chamish, at netvision.net.il. Now we move to 1898, one of the most important dates in human history. Now, I'm not going to do my lecture on the Sabbateans right now. Okay, this is not the time to understand that the early labor Zionists didn't have the Jews' fortunes in mind when they were conniving to get themselves a state. The anti-Semitism, they were responsible for a good chunk of it, and what is known as the Illuminati or the Jesuits were responsible for the rest. That is for another lecture, and I proved that one well enough. The point of the matter is one of the most important events happened. Now imagine it's 1898, and you are the leader of the biggest country in Europe. You think you're going to Jerusalem? You know what a trip it was in those days that to go to this backwards Turkish province surrounded by bandits without roads. I mean, nobody showed up in Jerusalem. It was too dangerous and too hard to go there. There was just no communications for the king of Germany to go to Jerusalem, but he does go to Jerusalem. But he's not alone. Following him up to Jerusalem is Theodor Herzl, the father of Zionism. In 1898, Herzl met Count Wilhelm in Jerusalem. This was the most important meeting of two major powers in the world. And nobody knows about it. Now, somebody's got to know about it because this meeting caused World War One. Now, I'm going to explain it in simplified terms without doing the whole Sabbatean business and who the early Zionists were and what they were all about. The world then was very similar in some respects, Catholics, Protestants, and they have their own organizations, and Herzl was trying to get the Germans, the Catholics, he was trying to get them to agree to give him a state. He wanted a Jewish state in Palestine. And all the internet will tell us is that Count Wilhelm rebuffed Herzl. And by the way, everyone, go into Google, write Herzl, Wilhelm, Jerusalem, 1898, and you're going to see something quite fantastic. Herzl traveled all that way up to Jerusalem and was rebuffed. Now, I thought about this, and no one else figured this out. And all this time, all this study of early Zionist history, what does rebuff mean? If Herzl was going to get a state, there was only one way to get a state. Germany had to make war on Turkey. That was the only possible way there could be a Zionist state, and he was rebuffed. So what happened is that Herzl flew back to England, and he told them it's hopeless. The Germans and the Turks have made an alliance. The Turks are letting the Germans build their churches. The Turks are letting the Germans get Jerusalem back their way. And this was too much for the British Zionists. This was too much for the Zionists. The next thing was too much for the Zionists. Herzl said, we cannot defeat the alliance of the Germans and the Turks. It's too strong. You have colonies in Africa. Make one a Jewish state. The British, the whole point of Zionism, the whole point of British Zionism was a state in Israel. No other state could possibly win the hearts and minds of Judaism, and they could not defeat the Jews and their belief in God. They had to have Israel. And Herzl died shortly afterwards. Within 2.5 years, in 1904, he was dead, age 44. Now, I want to tell you what we were told when I was growing up. How did he die? Why, he worked so hard that one day his heart gave out. Even back then, at age 44, your heart didn't just give out. So I went looking for what was wrong with him. Everyone says the same thing. He had an undisclosed condition, went into a Paris sanatorium, and was never seen again. And I'll tell you something straight off. They murdered him. Herzl was murdered. And then the story about his heart ran out. They murdered him because he did not want Israel set up in the ancient lands. If it meant a world war with the British against the German-Turk alliance, he knew that was the only way to get Jerusalem back for the British, get the Germans out. You had to destroy the Ottoman Empire. And that you had to do by making war in Germany. And that's what they did. If you look at World War One, the British sent 1 million men to the Middle East. They needed those men in the trenches. But they had to get Israel. They got Israel, and in 1917, as soon as Allenby crosses Jaffa Gate and takes Jerusalem back, Lord Balfour issues his famous proclamation declaring the favor, the favor the British government would look upon a Jewish homeland in Palestine. This was all done, World War One. All these deaths, all the misery, was to get the state in Palestine for the British and not the Germans. They wanted Jerusalem back. Now we go to the forward and the future. And by the way, if you ever have me on the show again, you want to talk about who the Donba are and who the Atatürk and the Young Turks are and how the Turkish Republic was brought down, I'll do that some other time. But the main point is Turkey came under tremendous attack by world Zionism, and not the world Zionism, my Zionism, not the Zionism of Jabotinsky, not the Jews who tried to prevent the Holocaust, not the people like the Begins and the Ben Hecht and the Peter Cooks, and not the good people. There were good Zionists who knew what was going on. It was the labor Zionists. They are called the peacemakers today. The peacemakers of Israel know their state failed. They did not create a state in their image, the kind of state they wanted, a state that was repulsed by the Torah. They were getting themselves a state that was reviving the Torah, and they started chopping it up piece by piece in the West Bank and Gaza. That's why I call my book Bye Bye Gaza, because the minute the Jewish army was used to remove those brave pioneers from their homes, Israel was finished. And the finishing job, by the way, once again, I say it again, Peres will order Olmert to make the army of Israel. Sharon had eliminated the religious faction hugely from the army. They hate wearing the army of the IDF, the religious, today. They're ashamed to be seen in that uniform, but there was still a chance, you would think. But now that Olmert has got direct orders from the Holy See to destroy the Israeli army, to make sure it does not react to rocket attacks, to let its cities get abandoned, well, Peres is going to have his way. He is going this time around to do what he always wanted to do, bring down Israel for the Vatican. That will happen possibly if they get a missile war, if they actually get the missiles that may happen in a few, 3 or 4 months. Now, I'm going to add one thing that may be bothersome. Nobody knows about this Samson option. There's a real, real problem that Israel becomes overwhelmed with missiles and maybe does use nukes, which will bring, of course, the world to World War III, just like World War II, where the issue initially may have been the Jews, but the whole region got engulfed in this horrible, horrible Holocaust going on to all humanity. Now, that's a summary for now of why the Vatican is using Paris and why Ehud Olmert is going to destroy Israel. But the real culprit is Shimon Peres. I don't know why people are not going to his apartment. I do not know why there are not mobs outside his apartment block. I don't know why. The Israelis no longer want to save their country, I suppose.
Well, I think that they really don't understand. It's so confusing. And I think that, I think that the average Israeli over there has just been so wore down by, you know, repeated terrorist attacks and now the rocket attacks. And then of course, the failure of the IDF to do a good job when they got to Lebanon. I think
it
they could have done a good job. They would
failure.
Love to. I mean, they were ordered, somebody gave Olmert orders to stop the, and pull back and cease fire, and he obeyed. Instead
Let me tell you a little something very quickly. When I put out the article, and no one else did, but one person named Jim Searcy, lives on Cyprus, put up my article and spread it widely. I was on my email at 5 o'clock in the evening when my inbox disappeared. Over 1,000 emails went into cyberspace. Jim phoned me the next night from Cyprus and says, you won't believe it. I'm working on my computer. My inbox all disappeared. 6,000 names. Now, I don't know if the business with Tamara Yonah is inbox or not. She also is having horrible problems. I wrote her and I said, don't tell me it's your inbox. My inbox, after I wrote that article about the Rome police preparing a Kristallnacht, or a threat of it, for Olmert's visit, went out, my inbox went down. I have a strong feeling, I know it was hacked. That's been checked. But I have a feeling this business about the Vatican is so much the key of Israel's downfall, they didn't want that, they punished me. They punished Jim. All I know is it's the biggest story, probably I've had all year, because you could think that the Israeli people would wake up and understand that it was after Olmert's visit to Rome that he banned the roadblocks and he banned the army from intervening in Kassam attacks and so forth. But you can't wake these Israeli up. And by the way, this argument that I just gave you, I gave in 40 minutes. It's not impossible to explain, and it's actually very rational if you understand that the Vatican believe that Jerusalem is their city and they need someone in the Israeli government get it back.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens here, you know, in the next a few weeks, because I think that, you know, certainly this is just there's a phrase in the Bible that talks about Jerusalem being a cup of trembling. In other words, the center really of great and dramatic things, and I think we're going to see some great dramatic things there, and I think it's only a matter of time before the war and that whole part of the world just lights up again. Certainly, the people at Hezbollah in Lebanon are saying, look, this ceasefire, this is really only a temporary issue. I mean, we're going back to war with Israel. Now we're just having a time to rearm, and actually now they're stronger than they were before.
I've spoken 2 days ago with my family and my close friends. They're living a fool's paradise. Somehow they're blocking out of their mind that the war councils of Tehran and Damascus, they know how to fight the next war. Lots and lots of missiles. They've worked that out. Now, let me tell you something about now the breakdown of Gaza. And again, the name of the book is Bye Bye Gaza. It's at lulu.com. Type in Chambers and you'll get to it. It was, as I said, in that book. And please, Stan, I can't send you a copy. For $10, you can download the whole book.
I will go ahead and do that, Barry. Go ahead.
Now, what I was saying, and I wasn't just a schmo. I was sneaking into the Gaza Strip. I was giving lectures to the final days. I was saying I had a cousin in the Gaza Strip. I had people phoning on my behalf. I snuck in there to tell these people what to expect. Now, the first thing I said to them, and I used these names, I said, Betsy Lieberman is working for the government to make sure that nobody comes to Gush Katif. And lo and behold, he admits it. He testifies at Avigdor Lieberman's trial about how he worked with the police and the government to make sure no settler made it to Gush Katif. Every word I was writing is true. Every single word of it. And then the rabbi, Shlomo Aviner, I wrote over and over again. He's the one who came up with the wacky theory of handing out orange pieces of paper in protest and dancing circles around soldiers and kissing them on their cheeks to show we're such nice people, they wouldn't dare remove us. This was Shlomo Aviner. He stopped all rage against evacuation.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back, and we're going to be just about finished with Barry. Well, Barry, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Oh, you always do this to me, and I don't know how to do it. All I can tell you is that Israel is infiltrated. The right wing is taken care of. I mean, everything is taken care of. Manigut Yehudit, Mayor Moshe Feiglin, used to have, when he was Zohar Tzeinu, the protesters of Israel. Now he's got like 1,500 people he convinced to join the Likud. Why was that? Why did he break up the protest movement of Israel? Why would he want people joining a corrupt party? Everywhere you look, the people who are your leaders are, in fact, agents of the government, and there's no getting around that. The biggest agent right now is Ehud Olmert. He's taking orders from Shimon Peres. Peres does nothing now, but Peres is having a party every night. With every Kassam, he's happier and happier because he's going to finally deliver Israel to the Vatican. That, believe it or not, as crazy it may sound, it's actually true.
Well,
go to Lulu.com, get bye-bye Gaza, and you'll see what's going on.
Now, what's the relationship between the Council on Foreign Relations and certainly the Vatican? They work together often. What?
The Council on Foreign Relations are more Sabbatean. The Vatican is Illuminati. But the key is they know each other's business. And there are times where they fight over who gets what from the destruction. There are times that they work hand-in-hand in the destruction. But they are ruling the world. The Anglo-Saxons of the CFR and, of course, the Vatican Jesuit Bilderbergs of Europe.
All right. Well, Barry, certainly it's a fascinating time, and I hope we can call on you again. You can keep us abreast.
Anytime you want.
We have actually three different audiences every day, so we'll try to get this story on for one of our afternoon here this next week. I'll give you a call tomorrow.
Lord, this is the story of Israel's destruction. Get it out in any way you can, please, Dr. Stan.
Well, that's my job. That's your job, is to have the information. I'll try to give you a voice. God bless you, Barry. You take care of that influenza. Get feeling better.
You got it. See you later.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That's Barry Shammas. And I always enjoy having Barry on because he is so sincere and so concerned about the fate of Israel, as I'm concerned about the fate of Israel, as I'm concerned about the fate of this tragic part of the country that is on the verge of exploding into a massive war. I mean, certainly there is no question in my mind that sooner or later we're going to be at war with Iran and with Syria. In fact, basically we're in an impossible situation as far as Iraq is concerned. What's the solution? Why, forget about Iraq. Let's go to war with somebody else. If we go to war with somebody else, everybody's going to forget about the terrible mess we made in Afghanistan and Iraq. And, well, maybe we'll do better in Iran. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I need to remind all of our listeners out there that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And we hope that many of you out there listening, remember I'm giving you many people from various positions. I agree with not everything that Barry says, but an awful lot of what he says is absolutely right. I think that he's absolutely right that there is this Sabbatean movement. It is not imaginary. It's really very real. You can look it up in the Encyclopedia Britannica, and you will never hear anybody else besides Barry talking about the Sabbatean movement within the Jewish faith. And, of course, people talk about, oh, it's the Zionists who are behind everything. No, it's not the Zionists. The Sabbateans have infiltrated the Jewish religion. But then, of course, the Satanists have infiltrated both the Catholic religion and the Protestant religion. And they're all basically pay homage to the same God, the God of the underworld. There are at least a dozen, if not more, secret organizations that all interlock with a common goal, a new world order, and a new world religion. An excellent place to start learning about it is my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and perhaps Ted Flynn's book, certainly The Hope of the Wicked, and then we have so many other books on Aleister Crowley. We talked this last hour about the books, The Satanic Crimes, excellent book. You'll certainly want to hear of my interviews with Father Malachi Martin, as he talks about the various forces here in the world and how they all interlock. And, of course, he talks about the influence of the Vatican as an intermediary between the communists and the capitalists. But, of course, in another one of our interviews, he talks about the satanic ritual held in the basement of the Vatican. Here's a Jesuit priest, a Catholic, talking about this satanic force there. You can get the 4-tape set on the Wisdom of Malachi Martin, and we suggest you get it along with Malachi Martin's excellent book, Hostage to the Devil. If you get them together, why, of course, it'll be to your advantage. There's so much we have at Radio Liberty that will help you to understand what's going on. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. Let me suggest that you pull down our August, September, October, November, and soon the December newsletters. They will explain to you what really happened on 9-1-1 in a pattern different than you'll ever hear elsewhere. So if you have access to the Internet, why, you go up there and pull them down. We'll be putting them into a little pamphlet here in the not-too-distant future. And then, of course, we're carrying 5 DVDs on what really happened on 9-1-1. Because 9-1-1 was a watershed event. We're carrying 9-1-1, Press for the Truth, the story of the Jersey girls, the 4 widows who lost their husbands in the Twin Towers and were blocked at every turn when they tried to find out what really happened. Because we've never been told what really happened. All of the investigations have been to cover things up, not to reveal, but to conceal what happened. And the 9-1-1 Commission concealed the testimony of over 1,100 people who came forward to tell what happened, and that testimony was sealed for 50 years. Do you honestly think it was to conceal the information from Osama bin Laden? Then we carry the video, the 9-1-1 Mysteries, In Plain Sight, Terror Storm, and The Day That Changed America Forever. Those 5 DVDs we're carrying. If you want to get them all together at a special rate, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope many of you will start making preparations for the difficult times that lie ahead. If you'd like to get a food catalog, a health catalog, we'll be glad to send it. We'll send you one of our regular catalogs. And, of course, remember, we do carry the Berkey water filters. You do need to start laying and stockpiling the medical supplies that you're going to need to keep you healthy. And, of course, you need, of course, to begin putting in the food, storage food. We don't know when the war with Iran is going to come, but it will have dramatic impact on our society. Will it be a matter of months? Will it be a matter of years? Well, I rather think it'll be a matter of months, but that's only an educated guess. What we get from our sources, we'll just have to wait and see. Because we're constantly being fed faulty information. Why? Why, they want to confuse me as they want to confuse you, and so all we can do is watch and see what's happening, but sooner or later, one way or another, we're going to go to war with the Muslim world. Pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.